Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 355 for comics originally released on May 28th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC's Justice League Dark number 31. Have you been reading this title the whole time, Drew, or is this one you've gotten on and off, or are you just sampling this one?
Yeah, when it crosses over into something, I would try it then, but I'm not a steady reader.
Okay, I can understand that. I think this is a title that a lot of people may have kind of dismissed as sort of a Vertigo Light title. And, I mean, I can totally see that sort of an assessment, because it's not as Vertigo-ish as Vertigo would be. But I think it's actually a fairly well-done series, and one that's usually worth checking out. What's your experience with the title, Ben? Would you agree with me? Disagree?
Yeah, I think they're solid titles. It doesn't rise up to a must-read status, but it's always been competently done. I've always thought they were okay comics. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with them. No glaring errors or any problems.
I think that's actually a really great way to describe it, because this issue in particular, we got a ton of backstory on the Nightmare Nurse, who's a character that I don't know if she even existed prior to this run or not, because again, that's kind of a corner of the DC universe I don't tend to dive all that deep into. And I liked how we got that backstory in a way that moved the present-day story of Justice League Dark forward. But since I'm not really a big fan of that character, this issue kind of didn't really click with me as much as some of the previous issues. It was a good issue. There was a lot of story here. There was nothing wrong with this. It was just a little hard for me to kind of really connect with this on any kind of serious, deep level, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I felt very much just a spectator in with this book, and it was fine. The art by Guardini, is his name? Guinaldo. Yeah. Andres Guinaldo. It's very competent, and of course, De Mateus is a great writer. So it trucked along just fine. Didn't do anything though to pull you in and, you know, really get you excited about the title. But it was an okay comic. Nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, it's one of those that if you weren't a fan of the title coming in, I don't think this would make you a fan of the title.
Right.
But it certainly wouldn't put you off the title saying, well, I'm never going to waste my time on this again or anything like that.
Yeah, and I probably would never grab this title and say, here, try this out. This issue in particular.
Yeah, certainly not this issue. I'm trying to think if there are any issues I would kind of hand to somebody and say, this is a good jumping on point. You really ought to try the title. And none are coming to mind. I think this is a good title, but one that is almost neither fish nor fowl. It's not really a superhero book, although it pretends to be. It's not really a Vertigo book, although it arguably, I don't want to say used to be, but kind of, you know, hails from that background. So I think people who are looking for a more Vertigo title are going to be a little disappointed. People who are looking for a more superhero title are going to be a little disappointed. The people who are looking for it to be what it is, I think, are going to be very happy. But I just question how big that audience is.
Yeah, I see where you're going with the Vertigo, because, you know, Swamp Thing's in here. He's had a Vertigo book. Constantine had a Vertigo book. I've always been a big fan of Deadman. I've always liked him.
Yeah.
And so if you're aching for some Deadman, this is the only place you're going to get it. So, you know, this is the you would look to this book for that, because that character doesn't get used as much as he could, I don't think.
Well, and Zatanna is a decent pull from the real Justice League, if you will. But, I mean, with Swamp Thing, with Constantine in here, you know, it very much has strong background. I almost want to say roots, but that seems like a pun. From Vertigo. I mean, Constantine Hellblazer, I mean, that was like one of the staple titles the entire run of Vertigo.
Yeah, it did 300 over there, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. So I like this, frankly, a little more than I liked the Vertigo stuff, because it tended to be a little darker, grimmer, and grittier than I personally like. But the fact that they kind of softened it up and whitewashed it a little bit, I can see a lot of people who liked the Vertigo stuff being unhappy with that, too.
Yeah, I can see folks, especially with with Hellblazer moving, you know, I can see them being disappointed in this version of Constantine.
It all comes down to what are you used to?
Yeah.
And I read Constantine prior to Vertigo when he was in Swamp Thing and stuff like that. So the version of the character I really knew was more like this one than what he became in Hellblazer. Nothing right or wrong about that. But then everyone who came and really knew the Hellblazer version of the character, well, that's what they want. You know, it's like Punisher over in Marvel. Do you want the Marvel Universe version or the Max version? You know, they're the same character, but they're also very different.
Yeah.
One of the things that kind of stood out in this issue for me is there were some scenes where I thought they did a really good job kind of, you know, trying to pull people into the story and stuff. But then there were some others, particularly near the beginning, where we were getting a recounting of what was happening in more, you know, a narration style. And I think that was not the best way to kind of start this issue. And I think that was part of why I felt a little disconnected from it. You know, I was being told a story versus being in a story, if you will.
Yeah, I can see that. I like the little bit of House of Mystery that we got in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, if I recall, my favorite issue of this run was one that was where the House of Mystery was more prevalent. And I think it was a crossover where they had to take, like, Batman went to the House of Mystery and imagined a world where his parents hadn't died, I think.
I think it was part of the Trinity War stuff that led into Forever Evil.
Yeah, and that was really fun. I really liked that issue. And I almost think this would probably work better as a House of Mystery book. It might be, and you could do stuff around the house with these characters in and out. That might be a little more fun.
They've tried going down that road before on one or two titles prior to the New 52. And I think there's certainly a way to make that work. And I think, be it in an annual or another kind of let's focus on a character, focus on the House of Mystery, treat that as if it's a, not as if, I mean, it really is one of the members of the team.
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of play with that idea here some too. So this is a title that has a lot going for it. It also has a lot of not so much strikes against it, but things that make it a little harder sell for some people than, you know, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I think having the second and third tier characters make up the team is probably a tougher sell for folks. You know, you're not getting, you know, the big guns in here. So that probably hurts a little bit.
Well, it's the least Justice League-y of the Justice League books.
Yes.
And that certainly doesn't help it any, even though it's got Zatanna, who's a full-fledged member and stuff. But it's one that I think, I hope they keep around for the long haul. If they can get a creator, and I'm not sure who would be just the right creator, because, I mean, Demattis is doing a good job here. But there's got to be somebody who can, I don't say tweak the concept, but just get the execution a little bit more kind of, I almost will say on target or something. This is a title that I think could really break out and do a lot better if somebody could find just the right take on it.
What's Alan Moore doing? Could he come back?
Let's see. This is still over at DC, so I'm going to say no. Probably not.
Okay.
But, you know, Grant Morrison or, you know, there are some other people who could find a unique take on this, keeping it true to what it is now, but also kind of amping it up just a little bit to really kind of expand that audience. And I think the current team has that potential, but there's something about what they're doing here that, while I'm really enjoying it, doesn't seem to be something that the mass audience is really going to click with. This is one that I think is a hidden gem.
I think it's tough to grow this book with issues like this, which are above average books, but nothing engaging enough to put it on your pull list, recommend it to somebody else, anything like that, which is what you really need to grow a book.
Yeah.
If any books grow anymore.
No, by and large, they don't, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, this was above average, but just kind of on that edge. You know, I'm going to give it a low 4. Arguably, a high 3 would be just as valid. I do think this book has a lot more potential than it is currently realizing, and I'm not sure what's the missing ingredient there.
We're pretty close. I'm a high 3. It is above average, but not enough to give it a 4 for me. And if I was a regular reader, it might be a 4. But as a new reader, it's less effective.
I can see that. I can see that. And again, part of it for me is I am a regular reader. So that helped going in. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yes.
This is Thanos Annual number 1. Now, it's a little interesting since the series this is arguably an annual of was from 2003, started and I believe ended that year, maybe ended the following year, so annual a decade later, whatever. But, I mean, this isn't the first time they've kind of said, well, let's do a one-shot on a character. No, one extra page count, we'll call it an annual. How about that? This is by Jim Starlin, Ron Lim. What's your background with Thanos? Did you read Infinity Gauntlet and all that stuff?
No, this is it.
Oh, okay. We're going to come at it from very different viewpoints then. I opened this up. I was kind of glancing at the previously on, which, again, kind of funny because it's arguably a one-shot. And it was mentioning kind of where the character left off in, I guess it was in Infinity after the whole Inhuman stuff happened. And I'm like, wow, I totally forgot about that. That was so really not memorable. But now that they mention it, okay, got it. I remember where we left him. Then I flip the page and this takes place years ago. And I'm like, well, it's kind of ironic. They told me where the character's at now and it doesn't really matter. But this issue... again, great creative team. This is the same creative team that was on Infinity Gauntlet and some of that stuff way back in the day, and which I believe is like maybe 20 years old, if I'm correct. I read that stuff when it was coming out. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. This story starts up kind of dovetailing into part of a story from, I think, 1974, they say here, Captain Marvel number 33. And if any listener knows if there's a collected edition with that in it, please let me know, because I'm thinking I want to read that now, but I'm too cheap to buy the back issues. This whole thing is flashback, recap of the character and backstory. But for my money, and I really want to know if you agree or disagree with this, I thought they did this in a really interesting way to keep it engaging, interesting, seeming like it's in the now, and... seeming relevant, even though it's all just, you know, what is the background of Thanos? Now, for me, a lot of this was recap. For you, I think this was all new.
All new, and it was a lot of fun. I really liked it. I like old Thanos. He seems like a real nice guy. Probably a really cool guy. might have a little trouble with some of the heroes, it seems. But I really liked the future Thanos talking to the past Thanos, and the back and forth with them, that was really great. And they seemed like very different people, like someone who had grown up a little, like mm-hmm. like a more mature character, and then a less mature version of himself. And I thought that was really effective, the way they had them interact and their reactions, and then telling the tales through time and bouncing back and forth. I didn't get lost, and I'm the first guy to get lost on these things, and I didn't. I had a lot of fun with it. The future stuff, you know, the glimpse into the future was really interesting to see the piles of stuff going on there. That was great. Mm-hmm. There's just really a lot of cool stuff there. I mean, I have questions about things that I didn't really get, but it didn't take me out of the story at all. It was more of, ooh, I want to know more. I wish I knew what this meant, because that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like there was a hierarchy pyramid of, and then Thanos fit somewhere in the middle, and I don't know who half of the people in that pyramid are, and I'm like, oh, I want to know who he put on top and who's in the second row, and I want to know who these characters are, because this was a lot of fun. It was very engaging. I had zero expectations coming in. In fact, if we didn't have this book to review in Marvel, there was nothing in Marvel that I was reading this week. It was a goose egg besides this book.
Wow.
So I had really low expectations. None of my books hit this week. It was very rare, very strange. And I was really surprised. It was a lot of fun. Good book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This was one that, you were mentioning how you wanted to learn more about stuff. I mean, again, I pulled off the rack most of the issues that they were kind of recapping and stuff here, except for, again, some of those really early Captain Marvel ones and such. And it was one of those, it's like, wow, I'm really into the story. I want to know more. I mean, what better sign of success can there be for an issue than people not only being hooked in the issue, but wanting to go seek out more like this? And if you haven't read Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War, Infinity Crusade, Infinity Abyss, Those are various miniseries they did over the years. The earlier ones, like Infinity Gauntlet, much better than the later ones. You know how it goes with sequels and sequels and sequels.
Exactly.
But they're all fun. They're all very Thanos-based. There's also, you know, Warlock and the Infinity Watch and some other stuff to catch up on. If you really enjoyed this, there's a lot more like this to read. And that was a little bit, I think, of a missed opportunity, because I think if at the end they had a one-page house ad of, you know, and here's all the stuff we've recapped. I mean, it may have rubbed some people the wrong way, but I think if you're wanting more, knowing where to go for it kind of helps.
A nice little, you know, page of some of the trades that these things are collected in, you know, with that would be nice. I'm sure they're all in print.
If not, they're foolish. I mean, they did a pretty good job in a few places giving the names of the stories, but I don't think they did it in a way that it was clear that that's what was going on.
Mm.
Actually, only in one, and that happens just because it was the Infinity Gauntlet.
Is Thanos supposed to be in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes.
Is he the big bad in that movie?
He's in it.
Oh, okay.
Whether he's the big bad or not remains to be seen. He's a character that's kind of, I don't say been on both sides of the fence, because he's really not. He's a power to be reckoned with. Sometimes his interests align with the heroes. I would never say he's been truly heroic, but he's a more complex character, I guess would be the way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Now, this avatar, splitting off into the avatars to shoot through time and space, that's new, right? That didn't exist in anything else.
True.
That's new for this book.
That was arguably a retcon, but it was a storytelling device that I think worked beautifully.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
And made sense with where the Splinter version came from, or the Avatar version, whatever you want to call them. So yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a lot of good. Ron Lim, I don't think gets enough work. He's a really solid artist. Perfect choice for this again because of his past work on the Infinity stuff. This whole thing just really gelled well. And I was a little surprised at the end when they say, you know, hey, it's going to be continued in Thanos in the Infinity Revelation. And I'm like, well, golly, that's the first time I'm hearing about that. So I think the next round of solicitations, which cover August, will be when that is. So I guess this was well-timed, maybe a few weeks too early, because it would be nice if it was right before I guess the next round of solicits are going to be up on the web in another week or two, so maybe it was well-timed. I don't know, it just seems...
Well, yeah, and it'll sit on the rack for a while, because there's no next issue of this to bump it.
Yeah.
So it'll sit on the semi-new to semi-new releases for a while, and be in front of folks, and then so then gives you a little time for everybody to find it. And then the previews comes out with the next chapter, which now I'd be interested in before I was not.
Yeah, if this had come out after they had already solicited that Thanos, I'm assuming ongoing. I'm hoping ongoing. Maybe just miniseries, whatever. That would have been unfortunate. I think this really primed the pump for that series. So again, to me, this was a really fun thing. Made me a bit nostalgic for some past event stuff that I had really enjoyed. I'm going to give this the 5 out of 5. I think it worked in every way I can imagine, and particularly for something that was kind of retelling stories I've read in many respects and kind of putting this character's history into context. It was just a lot of fun and really well done.
I'm not quite to the 5, but I'm close. It's a high 4 for me. I did enjoy it, though. I enjoyed this book. It wasn't catapulted into the 5 realm, though, completely. But it is really strong, and I can recommend it. It's a very good read.
I can see that. I think part of it is, again, the difference in the vantage point. I brought some baggage in with me, having really enjoyed the Infinity Gauntlet, having remembered those events. You're coming at it without that. So I can definitely see where there's a little bit different vantage point there.
But still, strong title.
Yeah, very much. You're going to pick up the Thanos one when it comes out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Again, sign of success right there.
And I hate to beat this drum, but this was a really good story with a beginning, middle, and end. And a nice through line that catapulted you into the next issue. Boy, I wish we had more of these. You know, this is works so much better than a 20% of a story arc in what we're getting in a lot of these issues. So,
well, it's funny you mention that, because in terms of percentage of story, granted, it only hit the highlights, but it covered the events of at least 3 dozen issues. Now, granted, we don't get the quiet moments where, you know, what was it, a couple of weeks back, Black Panther's talking to, you know, some people for like 8 out of 20 pages, and it's just more an interlude sort of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have some of what we get in some other books where it takes somebody 2 pages to walk across the street. This moved along at a good clip, but that helps the story density, and it really builds up the story momentum. And I think you're right. This is something that this issue had that so many things we talk about and so many other things that we both read just don't have.
No. And I think we'll touch on that a little bit in the next comic.
Well, speaking of the next comic, let's dive in. It's The Cowl number one. This is from Image Comics. This is the Chicago Organized Workers League, which, of course, just reeks of it's a superhero team. It's like, no, it really seems more like a workers' union. I've pre-ordered the first 3 issues of this series. This is one where the concept sounds really cool, but I'll also admit going in, I was a little unsure if this thing was going to work for me or not.
Yeah, I was the same way. I thought Nightwing really went downhill there, and this is Kyle Higgins who was writing that. And so I was not as gung-ho. My brother is all in for Kyle Higgins. I mean, he loves it. I think he bought 3 or 4 copies of this because he just thinks it's going to be the best thing since sliced bread. I'm not as sold on it, but his enthusiasm was contagious, so I did get this issue and tried to keep an open mind going in. And it's not a bad comic. It's just, I don't know. The art is kind of murky. The story's kind of not, you know, kind of breezy. Not much there. It's got the kernels of a good story, I think. And maybe there's potential here, but unfortunately it's an issue one, and you surely shouldn't have just potential in an issue one.
I agree with just about everything you said there, because murky is a good way to describe the art. I had really mixed feelings on it. There were a couple of places I really liked it. I thought it was really good. There were other places where I felt it was more alluding to the story or implying it than actually showing it.
Yeah.
And that made me feel like I was near the story, but not in the story. And it's hard for me to really fairly judge aspects of the story as a result of that. I didn't think this was a bad issue, but it didn't really hook me entirely either. I mean, it's a period piece. It's set in 1960s Chicago. At the time in a place that has really no special significance for me whatsoever. So it's not like that's something that's like, ooh, I'm just excited about that. You know, there are certain things. You know, World War II has a certain draw to it in and of itself, regardless of what story you want to set there. You know, this didn't have it, wasn't a strike against it, just wasn't in its favor. We got a lot of characters in this issue, but none that I really felt connected to or that I could really identify with, or in some cases I could necessarily pick out of a lineup. Again, going back to some of the art choices they made. It's a lot more stylistic art than I tend to care for, and it's also got a lot of dark tones, shadows, and that, there's nothing wrong with that, that just doesn't tend to, it didn't work for me.
It's very reminiscent of Ben Temple Smith's art, I think, and yeah. This art style would be at home with a, you know, an issue of 10 Grand, Straczynski's 10 Grand, it's very similar.
And that's also a book I'm not reading.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, the best moment for me was the one superhero's kid telling off the chairman, Gray Raven.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was a really good moment, good story beat. And it paid off later on in the issue a little bit. You know, they kind of followed up on that. But, you know, there's not a lot to hang your hat on here. There's probably potential. I would think if you were a union person, if you were in a union or you were interested in, you know Chicago and the strength of unions in Chicago, you know, this cat, you know, kind of builds on that. So if you're interested in that from a history standpoint, there might be something here for you.
There's some people, I think you're right, that would resonate with a lot, whereas for me, it was a non-issue.
Yeah, it's a very unique point of view. You know, you don't see a union angle in any comics nowadays, so it is, that does fill a very unique space.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a very small audience.
Well, it's the kind of thing, if I hadn't already pre-ordered the next 2 issues, this issue certainly would not have convinced me that I've got to go email DCBS and say, oh, add this to my order or something.
Yeah.
But it also didn't make me feel like I've got to go email them and say, hey, take this off either. And it's entirely possible that this just isn't, you know, the right title for me. I may not be part of the target audience or whatever, and that's fine. I'm going to give it the other two issues I've got pre-ordered to give it a little chance to grow on me. Because I think this has, like you said, it's got some potential. You know, it was well put together from a technical point of view. I didn't like some of the choices they made, but I'm not saying they were bad choices. They just tended not to work for me, again, artistically and a few other things here and there. There was enough content here, but you're right, it was kind of breezy content or whatever. Enough different things happened that I didn't feel like I've felt like in a few, particularly some decompressed Marvel comics, where the entire thing was like two scenes and that's it. We at least had some stuff going on, whether it was deep, meaningful, or memorable. Okay, I'll concede that point entirely.
Yeah, agreed. There's a lot of characters in here, and but I don't know if enough time was spent on them to give them any weight. But you know, we'll see. I will give it another issue, but I'm only giving it one more. I'm not giving it two more. And for me, this was average to a little lower, because it was kind of disappointing as a first issue. So it's a low three.
For me, I would put it in basically the exact same spot. It's one of those that, frankly, again, if I didn't already have the two on pre-order, I'd be done with it at this point and feel fine with that. And it's not a question of if this the issue or the series is any good or not. It's just, it's not right for me. And frankly, by about halfway through, I was kind of checked out.
Yeah, agreed. And what I'm interested in is he has a 30-minute student film. Kyle Higgins has a student 30-minute film called The League, and that's what this is based on. And he did that in college, and I'm kind of interested in checking that out just to see if it's an adaptation of that 30-minute film for the first story arc, and that's what we're getting. That's quite possible. Or he's breaking that up, and that's how it's going.
Or if watching that would give us enough of a connection to the characters that this resonates more.
Yeah. It's called The League. I think it might be like theleaguemovie.com or something like that to find it. If you type in The League and Kyle Higgins, you'll find some link to it somehow.
Theleaguefilm.com is what it says here. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know how much it costs, but I want to follow that up and check that out, and just to see if maybe there's, because that's where the potential would be if it's a riveting 30 minutes and we're just getting 20% of that first story arc, then I can see maybe there's something there. I hate when they do that. I hate when creators do that with a first issue.
Yeah. This is one where the first issue really needed to knock it out of the park and didn't, at least for me. I think it has some shortcomings as a single issue. Again, whether it makes up for it in the collected, you know, edition or what have you, don't know yet. But it's got enough that I'll consider checking out that film. I'm glad you mentioned that. I just think it's a competitive enough market these days that this was not a strong enough first issue for really what I would green light and want to put out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they did anything wrong. I don't think it's bad. I just think the bar is really high these days.
Yeah.
There's a ton of stuff to go get. And particularly having read this right after having read that Thanos that just worked so well for me, it was, again, as much a matter of what sort of issue in comic and story am I looking for as to what they provided. And it, to me, this was more a mismatch potentially.
Yeah.
But we'll see where it goes, because the concept still intrigues me.
I'm less intrigued, but I would, I don't know.
Fair enough.
We'll see. I can't recommend this one to anybody.
It's about where I'm at. I'm not going to suggest people avoid it either.
Right.
But there are certainly, I think, other things worth spending their money on first.
Exactly.
Speaking of which, a lot of books this week. There's some really good ones. Couple of things surprised me here or there. One or two that I happened to read in the right order just through dumb luck. All New Invaders, that's issue number 5, clearly takes place before issue number 5 of Fantastic Four, and I had no reason to expect it to. I just happened to read them in that order, and I think if I'd read them in the other order, I'd have been a little, you know, it's like, come on, guys. You've heard the news about Fantastic Four and how it might go on hiatus, right?
I heard that, but I thought that was just a silly rumor. They're going to put it on hiatus because they want to get the license back?
No, they're going to put it on hiatus because they don't want to promote the movie. That's what I've heard. Whether it comes to pass, who knows? Tom Brevoort's doing the usual song and dance, tap dancing around, not answering the question, which is silly because it's not like he hasn't flat out lied to people before. I mean, the whole, you know, Civil War IV isn't going to be delayed fiasco from a number of years back. If they're going to put it on
hiatus, those 30,000 people that read it are really going to make a difference in the box office.
Exactly. The order of magnitude difference between those of us who read the comic and everybody who goes and sees the films. The only people it would hurt to put the thing on hiatus is the creative team for the title, Marvel, and those of us reading it. And not necessarily, well, I guess pretty much in that order, I guess. I don't know. It seems like it'll generate ill will from their fan base and do nothing for the people who do the movie. It just seems like such a silly movie.
I've never seen any of them. Or were any of the previous versions any good? The movies?
Oh, the Fantastic Four? Let's see. There was the Roger Corman one that they did in the span of about 10 days. And no, that was not any good.
Yeah.
Then there were the other two, and they were all right, but not...
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Nothing like what we're getting out of the Marvel Studios. And it's funny, because I had found out about this through some private messages on the forum and stuff, and one of the points somebody made, I forget who, and I apologize for that, is that it probably benefited Marvel for these other studios to have the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man, because it forced Marvel Studios to do Iron Man, Captain America, the Avengers, characters that at many times have been the lower rung titles compared to those other top titles of Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, X-Men, etc. So while they may be a little miffed,
I would think they would want them back.
Oh, certainly they want them back.
They want those back.
No question about that. And they may be a little miffed that they don't have them, but it was probably beneficial for them to not have them for a while. I mean, if they had the X-Men
now,
and stuff...
Go ahead. Who did Paramount get with the Fantastic Four? Do they get Silver Surfer? Do they get Galactus?
Oh, yeah. They used those in the second movie.
Okay. So those are off limits. That's too bad.
It's by and large, the way this sort of stuff seems to work is you're essentially licensing the title, if you will, and any characters that sort of originate or are home-based in that title. So
in the Quicksilver thing that's kind of straddling two different movie rights, that's kind of strange.
Quicksilver was a member of the Avengers for a long time, a member of the X-Men for a long time. He was kind of home-based in both titles. So both, I think, have legit rights, depending, presumably, on the specific wording of the contracts. You know, what exactly did they license? And odds are it wasn't that specific. So it would be nice if they could all play well together and build on what Marvel Studios has done. But I think it's incredibly childish to penalize the comic book fans because you're upset that you've still licensed out your property to somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't think I don't want Marvel to get them back because they can only put out their studio can only put out a couple movies a year anyway. So why not spread it out so we can get more of these comic book movies, even though they're not all, you know, A's there. But I kind of like the fact that Marvel, since they can only do two movies a year, so they kind of have to be choosy. And if they had X-Men and Spider-Man and Fantastic Four to choose from as well, we would never get a Guardians of the Galaxy. We would never get, we might not ever get a Captain America movie.
Well, and again, that was the point that was made of because the other titles were tied up with other studios, they've had to dig deeper into the library.
Yeah.
But I think if they had X-Men and Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and the movie rights and all that back, they would probably find a way to do more than just two movies a year. Because,
well, I mean, they have Avengers does $1 billion, and you know, you would think they'd put a new one of those out every year.
I wouldn't go every year. I think that's one that you want to space out every other year or something, just to give the creative team time to do it. But in parallel with doing an Avengers one, maybe every other year in between, you're doing an X-Men one.
Yeah.
Different people, different, you know, creators and such. Just like you can do multiple different titles and such. There's a way they could make all of that work really well. But they got to wait for the license to come back. And really, it comes down to how long is that license? How does that play out?
And Edgar Wright bounced from Ant-Man, so they need a new director there. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's supposed to be out next year. So I don't know how that's going to work.
I don't know. And it's going to be interesting to see if, because sooner or later, the Marvel Studios is going to have a bad movie.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be a while. But sooner or later, something's just going to be the wrong movie at the wrong time or whatever. And does that impact everything and start a downward spiral in, you know, kind of like it's been an upward spiral now, where it's success building on success? You know, would Captain America 2 have been as successful without the Avengers movie, without the Iron Man movies and stuff like that? You know, and if one of these flops, does that turn the tide of popular opinion or something?
Yeah, and this last X-Men movie, I think, benefited from the success of the Marvel Studios movies also, because it did $500,000. It's done the most. It set a record for itself. It was never did that well before. So it probably owes a lot of that success to the great track record of the Marvel movies that came before it.
Yeah, I certainly think so. Plus the previous X-Men movies, too. You know, I think people are a lot more accepting of these properties that we're reading every week in movie and TV format. You know, geek culture, particularly comic book culture, has really hit the mainstream. It's just nobody's bothered to check it out in the original comic book format.
Yeah. Come back. Come over here. This
it's not
is
even
where it
come
started.
Back. It's like, hey, it started here. Check it out.
Check it out, yeah.
But, you know, hey, that happens. Or it doesn't happen, as the case may be. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, that'll do it for me, man.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Batman 66 meets the Green Hornet number 1 from DC, Amazing X-Men Annual number 1 from Marvel, and Big Trouble in Little China number 1 from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.